Greetings from Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And today, I feel like a great relief, Hammond. Now, look, I get to pick some of the bands. We both get to pick some of the bands that we listen to for the show. And after the long slog of Toby Keith and Typo Negative and LL Cool J, and I know we had Slayer earlier this season, Porcupine Tree, it kind of feels good to have a favorite of mine. Okay,
Hold on a second. Let's point the blame game somewhere else. I might have suggested Toby Keith, but if you'd given a different country star, we would have gone there.
I'm not pointing any fingers. I feel like...
I will gladly own Porcupine Tree and Slayer. I don't mind taking those bullets. But
yeah, and Slayer, like all of these we needed to do, right? We needed to have we needed to have rap, so we had to have LL Cool J. We needed country, so we had Toby Keith. It's not like...
my vendetta against your musical tastes.
nor, my gosh, so defensive, Hammond. Oh my goodness.
It's you know, I got stuff.
Well, this was not a relief, but just kind of a nice easy week in comparison to other weeks recently, just because this is a band that if I wasn't doing Soundography or preparing for Coverville this week, I'd probably be listening to this band, maybe another band, but these guys would be in my rotation.
This is like your comfy papasan chair in the corner of your room.
This is. It absolutely is. Exactly. Let's tell people who we're talking about. I'm talking about a band called The Divine Comedy, a UK band that was part of the Britpop movement in the 90s, you know, along with bands like Blur and Oasis and Charlatans and things like that, but had way more of a string instrument influence than any of those other bands. Some bands use that as, you know, this song would be great with that. We'll use a little bit here. These guys put it in so much of their music that, you know, they're considered Baroque pop or chamber pop. And I'm totally fine with that.
Remember last week when I said I had them confused with another band? I figured out who that was. It was Paradise Lost, which is a very different kind of band than the Divine Comedy.
Well, and both of them are significant novels, right?
Like you're right. They are both very significant morality tales.
Right. Yeah, Divine Comedy gives us the Seventh Circle of Hell.
Yeah. Which is what Slayer was for you.
My week of Slayer. Exactly. We both went for the same joke. I love it. All right. Well, let's talk about these guys. I'm really excited to hopefully introduce people to this band. And I'm really curious to find out what you thought of this week as well. Divine Comedy is a chamber pop band from Ireland. They formed in 1989 by Neil Hannon. He, lead vocalist, he's really been the only consistent member of the band throughout its history. When you talk about the Divine Comedy, you're really talking about Neil Hannon, kind of like Jay Maskus and Dinosaur Jr. or Matt Johnson and The. There's a lot of great
Level 42 guy in the Level 42s.
Mark King, kind of. I would say Mark King and Mike Lindup are the central, but another good comparison, Chris Difford and Glenn Tilbrook. They're the only continuous members of the band Squeeze. So when you talk about Squeeze, you're really just talking about those two guys.
Or Brandon Urie and the Dance Hall Crashers or the Dance Hall or Panic at the Discoers.
Panic at the Dance Hall. crash at the Dance Hall. Yes, exactly. In some cases, he's playing all the instruments, Neil Hannon, except for the drums. Don't know why he's never learned to play drums, but he's been busy
learning how to play everything else.
Everything else, yeah. Piano and xylophone and guitar and all that stuff. In 1990, they released their first album, which was called Fanfare for the Comic Muse. This was heavily influenced by the sound of REM. Had a little bit of success, but was deleted by the label. Just flat out deleted. Even the band themselves don't consider this part of their regular catalog in their box set, Fanfare for the Comic Muse, is actually a bonus disc for one of their other albums.
This is like the Never Say Never Again of the Bond series.
That's a good comparison, right? Disowned by the Broccoli family and MGM. It was followed by a couple of lackluster and unsuccessful EPs, Time Watch in 1991 and Europop in 1992. In 1993, they released Liberation. Neil Hannon joined forces with producer and drummer Darren Allison for this album. It featured a diverse outlook that flows from synth pop to almost classical stylings. And the album was full of literary references to writers like F. Scott Fitzgerald, Anton Chekhov, William Wordsworth.
Walking through that door, peculiar events will ensue.
It is where you start to get the foundation for what would become the sound, the traditional sound of Divine Comedy.
I'm really not sure what Scott Fitzgerald did to you to say that, but okay.
What do you mean?
F. Scott Fitzgerald?
F. Scott Fitzgerald. I gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah, no. F. Scott Fitzgerald.
F. Murray Abraham.
That's right. We do need more people who just go by the first initial F.
Yep.
In 1994, they released Promenade, once again released with the help of Darren Allison, and it was driven with heavy classical influences. It was a concept album about a day spent with two lovers. Don't Look Down, The Summer House, and Tonight We Fly were all crowd and fan favorites.
It was at this point that they kind of went out. It was at this point they went on tour with Tori Amos, which totally makes sense having listened to this now. Because when I was thinking these were more of Paradise Lost, I'm like, what the hell is she touring with them for? She has been mentioned a lot throughout the last few seasons. Mm-hmm. And we talk about Tori Amos peripherally quite a bit. So maybe sometime we need to cover her.
We need to just put her on the list. Yeah, for sure. Tonight We Fly, by the way, is a song that gets covered in almost every Stephen Page of the Bare Naked Ladies live concert. He loves that song. And recorded a version with the Art of Time Ensemble. And now in his stay-at-home concerts, his live streams that he does, he frequently weaves that into the playlist.
How many times have you done Zoom concerts with that he's done?
With Stephen Page, three times. So not a lot, but he's done that song all three times. But he's done 20 or so at this point.
Wow.
Yeah, he's up there. For a while, he was doing full albums, full Bare Naked Ladies albums, track by track, and then he'd end the show with a few solo tracks.
Cool.
But and he did an all covers set a few weeks ago, so that was the most recent one I checked out.
Dedicated to the love of his life, Brian Ibbett.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If only. Hannon wrote and performed the theme for Father Ted. This was later worked into Songs of Love for the next album. He also wrote music for Tomorrow's World and the IT Crowd, or the IT Crowd. He's big in, we'll find out, see more of these later on, but he's really big into the kind of nerdy stuff that we're into, yeah, which I really, really like.
I think the fact that he plays such a niche style of pop music, that, mm-hmm, that lends to being kind of into niche and nerdy things, because
I think so.
And the fact that he's learned how to play all these instruments, everything about him just screams nerdtacular guest.
I think this would be an expensive get. These guys.
No, I was just talking about him showing up, not that he would perform.
Just show up, like, not be a band, not to be a musical.
No, like he would be. Sure. He would just show up because it's his crowd.
Yeah, and unrecognizable.
Yeah,
really, among the nerdtacular attendees, I'd be, you know,
you'd be worthless.
I'd be the creepy John Cusack say anything guy watching and making sure he's having a good time from across the party. In 1996, they released the album Casanova. The single Something for the Weekend was championed by a DJ from BBC Radio 1, which really was the start of the band's first major success.
Something in the woodshed, and I can hear it.
this whole album, by the way, very misunderstood album, and he's even said that in interviews, that it comes across very misogynistic. But if you listen, I mean, he's really playing the part of a douchebag Casanova throughout the whole album. That first song, that Something for the Weekend, which would have been on my list had it not been such a big single, is about a Lothario who picks up a woman. She tries to convince him that there's something hiding in the woodshed. He, you know, blows her off, says, no, get this through your head if there's nothing in there. Finally, she talks him into it, saying, all right, if you go check the woodshed, then I'm all yours, whatever you want to do to me. He goes in there. He gets knocked out. She and her friends take all of his money in his car. It's a great story. I love it. Anyway, that's Something for the Weekend. Other singles from this album, Becoming More Like Alfie, which is a direct reference to the Michael Caine movie that was later, Jude Law, I think, played him later on.
I think so.
And The Frog Princess, both of which received widespread airplay. 1997, an EP called A Short Album About Love was released. This was released at the peak of success. This was recorded live at a sound check with the Brunei Ensemble. Features a lot of songs about love. It's true. They covered Noel Coward's I've Been to a Marvelous Party for the album 20th Century Blues, The Songs of Noel Coward. And then they released Fin de Sickle in 1998. The biggest single was the song National Express. And this is probably one of their biggest hits. I still say you probably wouldn't recognize it. Didn't get a lot of airplay here in the US, but it's got a really catchy... There's a great video that goes along with this song about a dude in a sanitarium who dreams of being a driver for the bus line called the National Express.
To the family man handling the pram with paternal pride. And everybody sings. Yeah.
Uh-huh. All right. 1999, they released their greatest hits, A Secret History, the best of the Divine Comedy. It included new recordings of tracks from the second album, as well as two new songs. At this point, Henin worked with Tom Jones to cover Portishead's All Mine for his cover album, Reload. That's the one that has that great Burning Down the House cover with the cardigans and Sex Bomb with Moose T.
Because I know that in the late 90s or mid to late 90s, Tom Jones had this strange resurgence in popularity.
He did. And a lot of it was because of Reload. And then a follow-up album called Reloaded, which was the same album with a few extra covers that he'd done. But he was partnering up with all these modern musicians, Cardigans and Neil Hannon. I'm trying to think who else is on that album, but it's all like modern stuff. Stereophonics, I think, are on there. And so that kind of put him back into the younger crowd's eye as like, oh, this dude is playing with one of my favorite bands. I got to check it out. In 2001, they released Regeneration. This was an attempt to remake the band. Hannon moved to a more Brit rock sound and style. Yeah, this album, for me, is a little bit more Radiohead, a little bit harder to get into. I had a difficult time both when I first originally picked up this album, as well as re-listening to it for this.
They say that you'll hear him if you're really listening, and pray for that feeling of grace.
As a matter of fact, this album kind of, I wouldn't say it put me off, but it made me kind of forget about Divine Comedy for a few years, and I'll talk about that too. Neil also toured with Ben Folds, and Ben covered the Divine Comedy song Songs of Love for his Sunny 16 EP.
And again, knowing now that these guys are these guys, that touring partner totally makes sense.
Totally does, for sure. In 2004, they released the album Absent Friends, great toast song. This was a balancing act of their lighter and more earnest tones. And the song Our Mutual Friend from this album, again, the lyrics, the stories he tells with his lyrics, that one is just so heartbreaking.
Which is funny because as you just said earlier in the previous sentence, it's a lighter
album. Right. They're lighter tones, except for Our Mutual Friend, which is just heartbreaking. It is. It really is such a, like, you listen to the lyrics of that one, and guy meets a girl, is introduced by their mutual friend. They hit it off. They spend the whole night talking. They drink. He decides he's going to go in for a kiss. They kiss. And he says, nope, I'm be a gentleman. And that's as far as it'll go. And then later on, he pops by her house and sees her hooking up with their mutual friend. Oh, man.
So
a mutual friend introduced us. We talked about the noise and how it's hard to hear your own voice above the beat and the sub bass.
This reminds me, thinking about the lyrics and that story you just told, makes me think that they could have also been really good partners, either touring or writing along the lines of a Kelvin Gilbert kind of thing. Because he told stories like so. That.
Storytelling for sure. Beautiful South, I think. If you like the Beautiful South, it makes such great sense to like Divine Comedy. It's basically that same kind of songwriting, but more strings attached. Mm-hmm. Get it?
I got it. That was an NSYNC joke.
In 2005, Hannon started his own record label and re-released all of the output from the 90s. And also that same year, he provided vocals and a couple songs for the movie Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
You notice when the movies are good, I don't put any weird superfluous adjectives in front of it. It's just the movie.
Notice you did. That's right. Yes. For the great and fantastic Baby's Day Out 5.
Look who's talking again.
Right. That's right. Exactly. Look who else is talking now also. All right. In 2006, he released Victory for the Comic Muse. This is kind of like a play on that first album, Fanfare for the Comic Muse. This album was recorded over 2 weeks, much of it live and more spontaneous sounding. Also in 2006, he recorded Song for 10 and Love Don't Roam for the Doctor Who television soundtrack album. Again, more nerdy stuff that he likes. 2010, Bang Goes the Nighthood. This is actually about the time I picked them back up. I hadn't heard Absent Friends and Victory for the Comic Muse until I picked up the box set. And I'm so glad I did, because the latter of those, Victory for the Comic Muse and Bang Goes the Neighborhood, are becoming my favorite, two of my favorite albums by Divine Comedy. 2010, as I mentioned, Bang Goes the Nighthood. This was recorded in RAK Studios in St. John's Wood by Guy Massey, and the orchestra was conducted by Andrew Skeet, who is the arranger on this album.
Just about where the next meal's coming from. Neapolitan girl. Innocence can.
In 2011, they released Live at Somerset House, a live album, as you might guess. 2016, Foreverland, a studio album. 2018, Loose Cannon, a live album that features performances from the 2016-2017 Foreverland tour, and it was released digitally on February 16th, 2018, after being made available as a CD actually on the tour. And then the most recent full album, 2019's Office Politics, the song Q Jumper was released as the lead single. Business and pleasure.
So Hillary looks at them all and sighs, closes up the Venetian blinds. He made his fortune on the horses.
This is talk about your songs where he plays kind of a jerk. This is a song where he plays kind of a jerk. This is the band's first double album, by the way, Office Politics.
Yeah, you've been going for God knows how many years, and you finally got okayed for a double album.
Right. You're allowed. Yeah. Yes. Technically, well, again, the that Greatest Hits, The Secret History, in 1999, they released two versions of it. One of them was a double album with a bunch of B-sides and demos and stuff. But I guess that probably doesn't really count as a double album. It's just like a re-release with a bunch of outtakes and
just stuff on it.
Stuff. That, by the way, Office Politics album, double album, the first album of it It's really, really solid. And another video I'll recommend you check out is the combo video for Infernal Machines and You'll Never Work in This Town Again. The video is animated. It's brilliant. It looks like if you reminisce the opening title sequence for the show Mad Men, then you'd probably really like this video. It's that same kind of Madison Avenue style.
Okay.
It's really cool. And it's got a really good song.
One of the things I'll say as we're starting, we wrap up their catalog, is that we haven't mentioned this in a very long time, but this collection of music that we just listened to is ripe for a catalog musical.
Yeah. Oh, are you kidding me? That'd be great.
I think we could pick out 4 or 5 stories from all the songs and put 20 songs together and come up with, you know, 2 or 3 different versions. The one where he's a jerk that's reformed, then the guy who's nice and then finds out he's a jerk and then reforms him. I mean, there's so many things you could do. Lost love, relationships. There's so many different stories you could go.
Yeah, you'd basically be going, it would be the story of going from heartbreak to heartbreak with being a jerk along the way, right?
Yeah. Well, with jerk and mild redemption, because no one would like you if you're constantly a jerk.
Well, you guess you have to somehow, yeah.
Yeah. And you can't have the audience hate your main character all the way through.
No, they have to at some point sympathize and like him. It's true. Very good.
I did not come up with anything outstanding that I didn't put in the stuff. It's not like they charted a lot.
No Grammy Awards.
Yeah, they really weren't. I could say, I guess their biggest claim to fame is they are one of Brian Ibbett's favorite bands.
Which is high praise indeed.
Yeah, you've got discerning taste. You are very discerning in your musical. I kind of like a lot of stuff, and according to you, some of it's garbage. So, so you've got very discerning taste because, you know, right up there with the Spice Girls.
Right, exactly. Yes, that if that doesn't cement the stamp of Brian Ibbett quality, I don't know what does. all right, Hammond. Well, let's talk about seeing these guys in concert. They're actually they're one of the first shows I saw during COVID times from a live stream that they did at the Barbican. So yeah, of course I was watching the Stephen Page Bare Naked Ladies live from home shows. These guys actually went to a place they were planning on having a live show, still did the live show with no audience, but cameras in every direction. And if they make that concert available as a DVD or Blu-ray or something, I'm buying in a heartbeat. That was such a great show. The first concert that I saw. Maybe the only concert that I saw during the pandemic so far. But let's say you see them in concert. That's where I was heading with all this. What song are they guaranteed to play? And this is a tough one because not having a big American following and you not being familiar with what's a single, what's a hit, and not me as well, not sure what's a hit, what's big and what's not. What are your thoughts?
All right. So just based on age, I think is how I made this list, is mostly I picked Tonight We Fly, Songs of Love, National Express. Those are my three that I picked. And you added?
Sure. I did add Daddy's Car just because I see that one live in YouTube. If I go searching for Divine Comedy, I see that one, a couple live versions of that. So I figure that's one that he does often. However, Hammond, I'm going to tell you right now, you named the top 3 songs that they perform live in concert. Tonight We Fly being the number 1 out of the 3. Tonight We Fly, National Express, Songs of Love. By Becoming More Like Alfie, Generation Sex, Lady of a Certain Age, Something for the Weekend, Our Mutual Friend at the Indie Disco, and I like rounding at the top 10. My choice, Daddy's Car, Not Till number 16 in the list.
Wow.
And yeah, so good. Well done, sir. You nailed it. I think probably seeing it from a distance is probably better than being really up close to it.
I think that's part of it. Also, I mean, have we been doing this now for a while? So if I'm not sure, I usually just go for some of the older songs that were released as singles.
Yeah. Yeah. And Daddy's Car was early on, but it didn't become a single for them. It's funny. He must go from becoming more like Alfie right into the song Alfie from the movie by Cilla Black, because that one's the most played cover in their repertoire. Don't You Want Me by the Human League. That's an interesting one.
Yeah, that is an interesting one.
Yeah. And Where Do You Go To, My Lovely by Peter Sarstedt. Where do you go? Like that. It's almost a Night at the Roxbury hit.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
He also covers No One Knows by Queens of the Stone Age and the love theme from The Godfather, Raspberry Beret by Prince.
I could totally hear that. It'll be stringed and synth popped up. I totally hear that.
My God, I am like, when we're done recording today, I'm going to go look for it to see if some of these are on YouTube. These are amazing. He does cover Mr. Blue Sky by ELO, and he released that on as a B-side, or maybe it was on that. Second disc of the greatest hits.
Now, didn't you pick that song? Didn't you pick that song for our ELO show?
Oh, I absolutely did. I love that song.
Yeah,
yeah, it was definitely in my playlist because that's a favorite song of mine. Oh, covers. Yeah, no, that's right. We segue from me telling about what covers they do in concert into what covers we think they should do. And I'm so glad I didn't pick Raspberry Beret by Prince. No, I picked another one of our bands that we've talked about on this very show, Squeeze. Another show that's as British as Bangers and Mash. A song, Another Nail for My Heart, one of their hits that I think would be a good one for Divine Comedy. It would really take an artist with a real affinity for that Britpop sound to cover Another Nail for My Heart. And you drop it, of course, an octave because Glenn Tolbert's voice is way up high and Neil Hannon's voice is way down David Bowie low. And then you'd also probably drop the tempo a little bit to the typical Divine Comedy level.
Yeah.
How about you?
So I picked something kind of falls in that love song, storytelling kind of vein, and I picked Your Song by Elton John.
That's a good one.
I really think they could do a really cool version of this, especially if they dipped it fully in the vat of Divine Comedy.
Right, right. The full-on strings.
Yeah, you can't half-dip violin, this. You got to go full. Yeah. If you can't bear claw this, you have to go full-on.
Right. No, I think that'd be a great one. And I could hear it would start out with just Neil playing piano and then the strings would come in. It would get bigger and bigger and bigger, right, as it progresses.
And by the end, it was this full orchestral sound that wraps up.
That's great. Very cool. Love it. All right, let's get to our playlists. Damn it, I want to do it now. We're going to get to our playlists. So we're going to start off with mine from the Liberation album, a song called Daddy's Car. As I mentioned earlier, as I guessed would be frequently played in concert. It's not, or it's not the most frequent song played in concert, but...
16 on your list of concert favorites.
16th, yes, exactly. It's a great song, great story, storytelling song, tells about young love, probably young love among the slightly spoiled and disaffected because they borrow dad's car, they go and make out, and then they crash the car for no apparent reason and talk about the relationship, which is in its early days, but still has a twinge of sadness in it, and not because they had a car wreck.
It's because the dad's going to kill the one.
Dad is going to kill the one. This is definitely true. Well, that's why I think the spoiled and disaffected, they don't seem to be too worried about that. So I think they don't think daddy's going to care. Number two, Come Home, Billy Bird.
Hails a cab, but the driver sucks. He drives so slowly and he talks so much that it hurts. Billy Bird's aching brain. Runs from the cab to the check-in desk. She says, no way.
This is from the Absent Friends album. This is as pop songy as Divine Comedy gets, and they do a really good job of it. This feels like it would be at home among one of XTC's more pop songs. This could have gotten, it maybe did even get some radio airplay. I don't know. There is a music video for it. Cue Jumper, which was the lead-off single from Office Politics. Like I mentioned earlier, he's great at writing songs from the perspective of very unlikable characters. This might be the most jerky, unlikable character because he brags about cutting in front of you in line.
I jump the queue because I'm smarter than you. I jump the queue because I'm better than you. Red lights.
And going through red lights, that's the whole queue jumper is cutting in front of you in line, jumping the queue. And, you know, basically says that, you know, you choose to follow the rules. I choose not to. And you're just jealous of my success. And it's the most dickish thing. So again, when you listen to that song, please don't think that he's the dick. He's playing a dick. It's he's not a real dick. Number four, To Die a Virgin. This is from Victory for the Comic Muse.
And this is one where he's playing a virgin. He's not really a virgin.
Right. He's just playing. See, he plays characters. You get it, Hammond. Yeah, this is a sweet song told from like perspective of a 16 or 17 year old on their birthday who's really excited because his girlfriend told him that she's going to help him lose his virginity on his birthday. And he's, you know, been reading magazines and getting prepared and excited for this day. And, you know, it's just going to be a big letdown.
And then he runs red lights and cuts in line to get there.
You're writing the play. You've got the play going. It's beautiful. It's funny because I didn't put it on my list, but there's a song on Office Politics called Norman and Norma. And it's another one of these great stories. And it's like, it tells the story of this relationship from this couple as they get married and they are always just so in love with each other. They have kids and they raise the kids and the kids move off and suddenly they don't know what to do with themselves. And you're thinking, God, you know, okay, I've heard songs like this all my life. This is not a very unique story. And then they discover LARPing and it reinvigorates their relationship. And I defy you to find another song that is a bigger commercial for live action role play. so there you go. That would be another one that would be in the play. It would be,
Well, yeah, you have to have couple. LARPing. I mean, that's the climax of the that's the climax of the first act.
Right, exactly. Act one ends with a battle.
Yeah, lightning bolt.
In the park. Number five, At the Indie Disco.
We drink and talk about stupid stuff. Then hit the floor for tainted love.
Here's what's great about this. It's not a story song. Usually I pick the story songs. No, but this is another one of my favorite types of things where it's a list. I like list songs, as you all know. This is a list song of 80s bands. So it feels like it was written just for me to like it. Because it's listing 80s bands. How could I not love something like that? That's from Bang Goes the Nighthood. And a number six, because I had to put a number six, even though I left it on there as number five. Gin Soaked Boy.
I'm the sunset in the east. I'm the ruby in the dust. I'm the trust in the mistrust. I'm the Trojan horse in Troy.
This, I believe, is one of the two new songs from The Secret History of the Divine Comedy. So not a greatest hits, even though it's one of the bonus songs included on the greatest hits album. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. This isn't just my favorite Divine Comedy song, but it's actually one of my favorite all-time songs, just hands down. I love the build, the lyrics, especially the very last, one of the last lines on the song is, I'm Jeff Goldblum as the fly, which is a weird lyric to put in your song, but again, speaks to his nerdiness.
Yeah.
And this is in the top 10 of my most played songs on iTunes and on my phone. This was a staple during some of my longer bike rides. I'd cue this one up when I was getting close to coming home as kind of like that last push I needed.
When I get on my long bike rides, I usually just put on one Dream Theater song and drive around till it runs out.
Just one Dream Theater, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's weird. I could go 30. Also, I could go 35 miles on one Dream Theater song.
I'm sure you could. It's also funny because, again, it's a list song, right? He's listing off all these things that he is. I'm the catcher in the rye. I'm the something in this, blah, 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 whatever. And that's a good example right there of why, for whatever reason, I can't sing along to the song because I can't remember all the things he lists. So the way I sing along to this song is I go, I'm the in the sky. Because I don't remember the first part. But as soon as he says what the thing is, he is. I remember, oh, it ends with in the sky. So, Gin Soaked Boy, a favorite of mine. How about you? What'd you come up with?
So, my first one is Death is a Supermentalist from Liberation.
And watch the dead skin fall away. See what can be seen between the table.
After I heard this song, I kind of relaxed because I knew what I was getting into. I was like, okay, yeah. I understand why Brian likes this. I understand why we're listening to this, and I'm trying to figure out why I haven't heard this earlier. Because there was a period of my life where this is the kind of stuff I listened to. So I was like, okay, sure. I'm in.
It is very theatrical, so yeah. That's one of the things I was hoping you'd really like about it.
My next one is Seafood Song from Promenade.
With every fish, as fresh as fish can be, you see. I'm into my oysters, barbecues and caviar. No matter how far away they are, I'll be there at them. She said...
This one just struck me as funny. I giggled through most of it, and I'm not even sure why. I just was like, they're singing about seafood. This is the best. Put this on real loud as I pull into a Red Lobster parking lot. It's just
right,
great.
It should be It should be a Skippers commercial.
Wow. Skippers, what a around. Pull for Skippers.
Yeah, Skippers. Well, you used Red Lobster. I couldn't think of another.
Wow. May as well call it Cat and D's.
Oh, there you go. They're Arthur Treacher's.
Yeah. Sure. Oh, wow. Now we're showing our age.
At least that's British.
Yeah. My next one is Earth is a Rock from Crucifixion.
Saying a prayer, holding the son of a womb in a battle that fled.
This one, if they weren't paying tribute to Pink Floyd, when someone asked them if you were paying tribute to Pink Floyd, the answer should be yes, because this song is Pink Floyd as hell.
Yeah.
And if they did it on accident, then they need to stop listening to Pink Floyd before they write songs.
Right.
But it was really cool. It was a good tribute to Pink Floyd. So
that's cool.
Yeah. I'm going to I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying if they're asked if this is a Pink Floyd tribute, then your answer is yes.
You just say yes. It's like being asked if you're a god.
Yep. Let's see. Then Time Watching from Songs About Love.
When I fall apart, put me back together, and my life will be complete.
So this is a typo positive song.
Is it really, or is it just feel like?
No, it feels like it. This basically is a typo negative song.
Yeah,
but it's pulled directly from a Broadway musical because it has all the lyrical content is very typo negative, and the production style is incredibly Broadway musical. So
I like how you called it a typo positive.
Sticks and Stones from Absent Friends. Again, another song that should be from a musical or like a film noir mystery. I really, really dug this. There's some cool musical moments in this. And without too much qualification, I think this might be my favorite of theirs.
Hmm, that's cool. Yeah, I like that song. And it's funny because we were probably listening to it right around the same time, or at least when I was listening to it and I got to this album, I looked in here and saw that you had picked that song just as it was starting in place. I'm like, oh, cool. I'll have to see... see what Hammond likes about it. And I can definitely see why you like it.
Oh, see, now you flipped it on me.
I did. That's cool.
So as a note, well, I might pull this and put it somewhere else, but as a note overall, we need to talk about musical news a little bit and Daft Punk not being a band anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Have we found out like how old these guys are? Like the robots have not said a word. Yeah. Cause I'd be curious. They've been doing this for a long time. And because it's so heavily synth and that sort of thing, and we don't know what they look like, it could be two relatively old dudes who are like, yeah, we're fine. We have enough money to retire. We're good. We don't need anything else. And thanks.
Yeah. 2 80-year-old French dudes.
Right, exactly. But like I told Scott, I said, they're going to reunite for something. Don't worry. It'll be, you know.
Coachella 22.
maybe not that soon. Maybe it'll be the third Tron reboot, the second Tron reboot that we get.
The one without the scary face animations.
That's right. Exactly. Ooh, creepy. So overall, what'd you think?
I enjoyed this. Once I realized that I wasn't, this is kind of like XTC. Once I realized what I was jumping into, I realized, okay, Brian's not going to lead me down doom metal path without telling me.
So
once I realized that Divine Comedy and Paradise Lost are two different bands,
right?
Yeah. And that this was right in, again, right in the wheelhouse of Brian Ibbett. Then I was like, okay, I'm in. Because, you know, I like we've all talked about, I like my Fat Synthuns, I like my prog, I like my my metal. But at the same time, I also really appreciate good songwriting and theatrical music and clever lyrics. So, you know, there was always something for me to like. There are very few of these songs where I'm like, okay, the once is over.
Yeah. Yeah. There are a few songs not Liberation, Promenade. I think Promenade. No, what was the Radioheady one? Regeneration.
Regeneration.
That one. I was like, I might skip this one.
Like I said, but very rarely did I think, man, this is a long 3.5 minutes.
Yeah. Right. Listen, if you can sit through a Dream Theater song, then you can sit through a Divine Comedy.
Well, and that's the other thing too, is actually they're not that far apart.
They're not. They really aren't. No, they've got a very Divine or Dream Theater has that very theatrical kind of feel to them as well.
Yeah, all you're missing is the heavy strings and turn your guitar down.
Right. Right.
It's totally and true. Add 4 key signature changes and 4 time signature changes.
Just that. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Excellent. Well, cool. Well, good. Glad you enjoyed us. So glad we're done with, like, you know.
By the way, I do want to say we did have a Brian Ibbett sandwich because we had ecstasy. Oh, we did ecstasy, yeah. And then we had the Super meat, trap. The cheese, and the lettuce of the stuff you didn't like, and the other bun is Divine Comedy.
Oh, I see what you're saying. This is right. Yes, between XTC.
Yeah.
XTC was definitely a Brian week for sure.
Yeah, so then we had LL Cool J, which was the lettuce. Typo Negative was the meat. Toby Keith was the cheese. And then the other bun is Divine Comedy.
Right. If we want to make it look like a Big Mac, then Steely Dan was the top bun.
Oh.
Arthur Brown was the special sauce. Slayer was somebody's fingernail that somehow ended up next to the fryer. Porcupine. Yes. But no, you're not wrong. I've had a couple. I mean, we both had our picks this season.
Oh, yeah. Sure. We've been pretty good. It's just been a little more extreme than normal.
Yes, definitely. So speaking of which, what's coming up next week, Hammond?
A week I've been waiting for 7 seasons. Hair Metal, 81 to 91.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this too, because this is where our Venn diagram circles overlap, I think.
Well, because you love pop music, and this is pop music with Hairspray and guitar solos.
For sure.
I do have to ask a question. Can I have 15 spots for my list?
Listen, if it makes you feel good, then I think I'm okay with that.
All right, I'll see. I've already got my 10.
You got my reference right?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, all right.
I gotcha.
Just don't ask for 17.
Oh, the winger jokes.
They're just fast and furious. Cool. Excellent. Well, that'll be next week. But before we go, we have an email to read.
That's right.
You can always email us, soundographypodcast@gmail.com. Do you want me to read this one or do you want to
read it? Yeah, you go ahead.
All right. Tom in St. Louis writes, "Guys, I'm a devout listener to your podcast all the way since episode 1, and it works for me with my highly eclectic taste in music. The only Toby Keith I ever liked is Sorry I Missed You, which is credited to Wayman Tisdale featuring Toby Keith." Crazy to find. You don't often see the featurings. I guess you do see them, but you don't see them as much in country music, the featurings.
But yeah.
The song often brings me to tears given the tragic end of life of NBA star and music artist Wayman Tisdale. I'm likewise sad to note that the song is no longer on Spotify. Please give it a listen if you can find it and have some tissues handy. He says that our podcast footprints are all over his Spotify playlist. Signed, sincerely, Tom in St. Louis, Missouri. That's cool. I will check out. I wonder if that song is on Apple Music. Cool. Well, we'll check that out. I'd like to see that. Oh, yeah. Cover of Sting's Shape of Your Heart. Oh, yeah. I'll have to check out some of this stuff. Looks really good. Cool. All right. So that's how you can email us, like Tom in St. Louis, soundographypodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. We are at The Soundography. Our website is soundography.com. You can check that out. We've got all of our previous episodes up there, so you can listen to older episodes, all of which contain show notes featuring the playlists in Spotify of all the songs that we can find. Links to where you can buy albums. This will be an easy one. I'll just link to the Secret History. Even though a lot of my favorite stuff comes after that, it's a good place to start. That's where I got my dad hooked on Divine Comedy, was with the Greatest Hits album. You can also follow or help us out by supporting us on Patreon. Coming up next week or very soon, we're going to be doing the Bee Gees documentary. Neither of us have seen it, but I figure it'll be a good one because there's so much more beyond the stuff you know about the Bee Gees if you're just a Bee Gees in the 70s kind of fan. Also, leave your reviews for our show wherever you can, if there are good reviews. Spotify, Stitcher, Spreaker, iTunes, wherever. And with that, that's going to do it. Hammond, anything to close us out?
I actually just want to thank you for having us do this episode, because as far as Brian-flavored music injected into my listening pattern, this might be some of my favorite.
Oh, good. Good. Well, certainly more than level 42, for sure. Happy to do it, and hope everybody else checks them out too. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Ibbett saying thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.